الجامعة الافتراضية السورية، كتاب كريمنال لا، القانون الجزائي، باي عماد الدين محمد. الوحدة التعليمية السادسة، chapter 6. يغطي هذا التسجيل الشرائح من 1 حتى 31. slide 1 to 31. slide 1 chapter 6 defenses. Incapacity and negating the elements of the offense. Slide 2. Learning objectives. 1. Explain the presumption of doli incapas. 2. Understand the procedure surrounding fitness to plead. 3. Distinguish between the defenses of insanity and automation. 4. Explain the rules relating to voluntary and involuntary intoxication. 5. Understand the law relating to mistake. Slide 3. Introduction. When a defendant is charged with a criminal offense, the defendant will decide whether to plead guilty and admit liability or to plead not guilty and contest liability. If the defendant pleads not guilty, he may challenge the prosecution case in one of three ways. 1. By challenging the factual basis of the charge, by arguing that the facts are not as the prosecution alleged them to be. 2. By arguing that one or more of the actus reus or mens rea elements of the offense charged have not been proved, or 3. By pleading a substantive defense to the charge, i.e. by arguing that there is a legal reason why he should not be held liable for the offense charged. Slide 4. Introduction. للاطلاع. The burden of proof in a criminal trial rests with the prosecution. The prosecution brings the case and the prosecution has to prove each element of the offense charged. The standard of proof in a criminal trial is high. The prosecution must prove beyond reasonable doubt that the defendant is guilty. The defendant does not usually have to prove anything. However, there are some rare circumstances in which the burden of proving the element of a defense rests with the defendant. For example, insanity. Under the law, every person is presumed to be sane. A defendant who pleads the insanity bears the legal burden of proving the elements of the defense. The rationale behind this is ease of proof. The defense are in a better position to prove evidence as to the defendant's mental condition, as the defense may instruct an expert to undertake a psychiatric assessment of the defendant. Slide 5. Introduction. للاطلاع. Occasionally, the defendant will bear an evidential burden in relation to a defense. An evidential burden is not a burden of proof and does not have a standard of proof. It is a burden to raise some evidence in order to make an issue a live one. The defendant will bear an evidential burden if the defendant raises defenses such as automatism, self-defense, and duress. In order to rely upon such a defense, either some evidence of the relevant defense would have to be adduced by a prosecution witness, or the defendant will have to raise some such evidence. However, the defendant does not bear a legal burden, so the defendant does not have to prove the element of the relevant defense. The prosecution bear the legal burden of proving that the elements of the defense are not present. Slide 6. General and specific defenses. A general defense is a defense which a defendant may plead in relation to any criminal offense. Examples of general defenses include insanity, automatism, self-defense, and mistake. A special defense may only be pleaded in relation to specific offenses. Examples include provocation and diminished responsibility, which may only be raised by a defendant charged with murder. Complete and partial defenses. It is important to distinguish between complete defenses and partial defenses. Where a defendant successfully pleads a complete defense, he will be acquitted of the offense charged. Where a partial defense is successfully pleaded, a defendant will be acquitted of the offense charged but may still be convicted of a lesser offense. Provocation is a partial defense which may only be pleaded in respect of charge of murder. If successfully pleaded, the defendant will be acquitted of murder but convicted of manslaughter. Slide 7. General and specific defenses. Capacity and negating the elements of offense. There are situations in which a defendant does not have the capacity to be held liable for a criminal offense or has a defense which negates the definitional elements of the offense, actus reus or mens rea. These situations include infancy, doli incapax, insanity, automatism, and intoxication. These situations all involve the issue of a defendant's capacity to stand trial and his fitness to plead. These are not defenses as such, but they are pleas that the defendant does not have the capacity to be, or that due to his mental condition, he should not be criminally liable for an offense. Upon a successful plea of some of the defenses, the defendant may be acquitted. The defense of insanity leads to a special verdict upon conviction on indictment of not guilty by reason of insanity, which confers on the judge special powers of disposal. Evidence of intoxication may result in the acquittal of the defendant in relation to some offenses, but may lead to his conviction for other lesser offenses. Slide 8. Infancy. In England and Wales, a child under the age of 10 lacks the capacity to commit a criminal offence. Section 50 of the Children and Young Persons Act 1933 provides a conclusive presumption that children under the age of 10 cannot be held criminally liable. Children under age of 10 are presumed to be doli incapax, incapable of committing a criminal offence, no matter how serious their conduct. The rationale behind this presumption is that young children lack the moral capacity to commit a criminal offense because their knowledge and ability to reason are still in the process of developing and they are unable to fully understand the consequences of their actions or what is right and wrong. This presumption cannot be rebutted under any circumstances. If an adult persuades a child aged 9 to steal from a shop, the child cannot be held liable for theft. However, the adult could be convicted of theft through an innocent agent. Children aged 10 or over can be held liable for any criminal offense. This is often referred to as the age of a criminal responsibility. Those aged 10 or above cannot rely upon the defense of infancy or doli incapax. Slide 9. The age of a criminal responsibility in Europe. للاطلاع. This varies from country to country and with the passing of time. In Scotland, a child may be criminally liable at the age of 12. In March 2011, the age of criminal responsibility was raised from 8 to 12. In Ireland, a child can only be guilty of a criminal offence when he reaches 12 years of age, increased from 7 years of age in October 2006. In France, the age is 13. Denmark, Norway, and Sweden, the age of a criminal responsibility is 15. Belgium, it is 18. Slide 10. Abolishing the rebuttal presumption for children aged from 10 to 13. There used to be a rebuttable presumption of doli incapax for children aged 10 to 13. This could be rebutted by the prosecution proving, in addition to the actus reus and mens rea for the offence in question, that the child knew that their conduct was seriously wrong or that they had mischievous discretion. The rebuttable presumption of doli incapax was abolished by Section 34 of the Crime and Disorder Act 1998. In the recent House of Lords decision of R.V.J.T.B. 2009 UKHL 20, Lord Phillips confirmed that Section 34 of the Crime and Disorder Act 1998 abolished the defense of the Dolly Inca Pax. Therefore, the defense of Dolly Inca Pax is not available to those aged 10 or over. Slide 11. Fitness to plead. In order to be tried for a criminal offense, a defendant must be fit to plead. He must have the mental capacity to stand trial. If he is deemed to be unfit to plead at the time of the trial, he will not be tried for the criminal offense charged. Fitness to plead is concerned with the defendant's mental state at the time of trial, not his mental state at the time that the offense was allegedly committed. Slide 12. Is the defendant fit to plead? Section 4 of the Criminal Procedure Insanity Act 1964 applies where the defendant is suffering from a disability which constitutes a bar to the defendant standing trial. The issue of fitness to plead is determined as soon as it arises, provided the jury have not already returned a verdict of not guilty. Whether a defendant is fit to plead used to be determined by the jury, but now it is determined by the judge. The judge may only rule upon the issue of a defendant's fitness to plead where the written or oral evidence of two or more registered medical practitioners is before the court. Factors to be considered in determining whether the defendant is fit to plead were established in 1863 in the case of Pritchard 1836 7C and P303. More recently, the case of Jean M. 2003 EWCA Crim 3452, the trial judge identified six factors to consider in determining whether or not the defendant was fit to plead. These were the defendant's ability to 1. Understand the charges, 2. Decide whether to plead guilty or not, 3. Exercise his right to challenge juror, 4. Instruct solicitors and counsel, 5. Follow the course of the proceedings, and 6. Give evidence in his own defense. Slide 13. Is the defendant fit to plead? للإطلاع. In the case of Podola 1959 43 CR APPR 220, defendant argued that he was unfit to stand trial for murder due to amnesia and claimed he had suffered memory loss of the events prior to and at the time of murder. The Court of Appeal held that amnesia in relation to the events surrounding the offense did not by itself render the defendant unfit to plead. The Court of Appeal also held that where the defendant raises the issue of fitness to plead, he bears the legal burden of proving that he is unfit to plead on a balance of probabilities. Where the prosecution raised the issue and the defendant disputes it, the burden of proof rests with the prosecution to prove beyond reasonable doubt that the defendant is unfit to plead. Slide 14. Did the defendant do the act or make the omission charged? Where the judge decides that the defendant is fit to plead, the defendant will stand trial for the offense charged in the usual way. If the judge decides that the defendant is not fit to stand trial, then the trial should not proceed any further. At this stage, the jury must be impaneled in order to determine if the defendant did the act or made the omission charged against him as the offense. Slide 15. Did the defendant do the act or make the omission charged? If the jury decides that the defendant did not do the act or make the omission charged against him, they must acquit him. If the jury decides that the defendant did do the act or make the omission charged against him, the judge will then decide upon an appropriate disposal for that particular defendant under Section 5 of the Criminal Procedure Insanity Act 1964. Under Section 5(2) of the Criminal Procedure Insanity Act 1964, the judge may impose upon the defendant 1. A hospital order with or without an order restricting his discharge from hospital, or a supervision and treatment order, or an order for his absolute discharge. Where the offense is one for which the sentence is fixed by law, in other words, murder, and the court has the power to make a hospital order, then the court shall make a hospital order with a restriction order forbidding the defendant's release from hospital without the consent of the Secretary of State. The procedure under Section 4A for deciding whether a defendant who is unfit to stand a trial did the act or made the omission charged has been held to be compatible with the Article 6 of the ECHR. Slide 16. Summary Trial. Lil-ittila. It should be noted that the provisions under the Criminal Procedure Insanity Act 1964 did not apply summary trials where the issue of fitness to plead arises in relation to a defendant being tried summarily for an offense which is punishable by imprisonment. The court must first determine the issue of whether the defendant did the act or made the omission charged against him. If the court finds that the defendant did the act, it may adjourn proceedings for an inquiry into the mental condition of the defendant prior to deciding how to deal with the offender under Section 11(1) of the Powers of Criminal Courts Sentencing Act 2000. Alternatively, the magistrate's court may make a hospital or guardianship order without convicting the defendant under Section 37(3) Mental Health Act 1983. Slide 17. Reform. Lil-ittila. The tests relating to fitness to plead and the rules on insanity are currently being considered by the Law Commission with a view to identifying better and more up-to-date legal tests and rules in this area. Slide 18. Insanity. The defense of insanity or insane automatism is concerned with the mental condition of the defendant at the time that the offense was committed. A defendant who is insane at the time of a trial will argue that he is unfit to plead. Insanity is a general defense which may be pleaded in relation to any criminal charge. We are concerned with the legal definition of insanity. The law in this area is not guided by any medical knowledge or definitions, and as such is difficult to reconcile with medical equivalents, such as mental disorder or mental illness. The legal definition of insanity controversially includes conditions such as epilepsy and sleepwalking. A defendant who commits a criminal offense during an epileptic seizure or whilst sleepwalking may only rely upon the defense of insanity, also known as insane automatism. The alternative defense of automatism, also known as non-insane automatism, which covers involuntary behavior, is not available to such defendants. Slide 19. Insanity. Lil-ittila. The defense of insanity is not a popular defense, as defendants understandably prefer to avoid the social stigma of being labeled insane. Where a defendant successfully pleads the defense of insanity, a special verdict of not guilty by reason of insanity is returned. Section 1 of the Criminal Procedure Insanity Act 1964. The Criminal Procedure Insanity and Unfitness to Plead Act 1991 amended the Criminal Procedure Insanity Act 1964 in order to increase the disposal options available to a judge upon the return of such a verdict. Under Section 5 of the Criminal Procedure Insanity Act 1964, the judge may make one of three orders. 1. A hospital order, with or without an order restricting his discharge from hospital, or 2. A supervision order, or 3. An order for his absolute discharge. As with fitness to plead, where a defendant is charged with an offense where the penalty is fixed by law, in other words murder, and he successfully pleads insanity, the court will impose a hospital order with restriction on the defendant. This means that the defendant may only be discharged from hospital with the permission of the Secretary of State. Slide 20, the distinction between insanity and automatism. للإطلاع, it is important to distinguish the difference between insanity and automatism because they lead to significantly different outcomes if pleaded successfully. A successful plea of insanity results in a verdict of not guilty by reason of insanity. By contrast, a successful plea of automatism will result in a complete acquittal for this reason. The defense of automatism is favored by defendants. The defense of insanity requires proof of an internal factor, a disease of the mind. Where there is no such disease of the mind, the defendant may plead automatism. Where the defendant acts as an automaton, there is often external factor acting upon him at the time of the actus reus. It is important to note that this is not always the case. For example, where a defendant suffers a stroke whilst driving and crashes his car, he will be able to plead automatism, even though there was no external factor acting upon him. Slide 21, the distinction between insanity and automatism, للإطلاع. Another important difference between insanity and automatism relates to the burden of proof. Where insanity is raised as a defense, the legal burden is reversed. The defense bears the burden of proving, on a balance of probabilities, the elements of insanity. However, if the defense of automatism is raised, the legal burden is not reversed. The defense bears the evidential burden, not a burden of proof, but a burden to raise some evidence of automatism in relation to the defense, but the legal burden remains with the prosecution. The prosecution must prove beyond reasonable doubt that the defendant was not acting due to automatism. Slide 22, burden and standard of proof, للإطلاع. The McNaughton rules govern the defense of insanity. These rules state that every man is presumed to be sane. If the defendant wishes to rely on the defense of insanity, he must rebut this presumption. The burden of proving the elements of the defense of insanity rests with the defense. It is unusual in criminal proceedings for the burden of proof to be upon the defense. The exception in relation to insanity is specifically provided for by Viscount Stanley, LC, in the leading case authority of Wilmington v. DPP 1935, AC 462. Slide 23. The McNaughton Rules, للإطلاع. The McNaughton rules govern the defense of insanity. These rules are derived from the leading case authority of McNaughton, 1843, 10 CI and F 200. The defendant was charged with the murder of Sir Robert Peel's private secretary. He shot the victim by mistake, having instead intended to kill Sir Robert Peel. The defense called medical evidence to show that he was suffering from morbid delusions at the time of the offense. These delusions meant that he was not capable of controlling his actions and he had no moral perceptions of right and wrong. The defendant was found to be insane and was acquitted. This result was highly controversial at the time and led to the House of Lords revisiting the law on insanity. The McNaughton rules were laid down by the House of Lords and have become the leading rules on insanity. The rules state that the defendant must prove that at the time he committed the act, he was laboring under such a defect of reason from disease of the mind as not to know the nature and quality of the act he was doing, or if he did know it, that he did not know he was doing what was wrong. Slide 24, the McNaughton rules. A. There is a presumption that every man is sane. B. This presumption can be rebutted by the defendant, who must prove on a balance of probabilities that at the time of the offense, 1. He was suffering from a defect of reason, 2. Which was caused by a disease of the mind, and 3. That he did not know the nature and quality of the act, or 4. That he did not know that what he was doing was wrong. Now, the question of whether the defendant was suffering from a defect of reason caused by a disease of the mind is a question of law to be determined by the trial judge. The issue of whether the defendant knew the nature and quality of the act or if he did not know it, whether he knew that his conduct was wrong, is a question of fact to be determined by the jury. Slide 25. Defect of reason. In order to plead insanity, a defendant must prove that at the time of the offense, he was suffering from a defect of reason which was caused by a disease of the mind. This is a question of law for the judge to determine. At the time of the offense, the defendant must be unable to use his power of reasoning. This must occur due to a disease of the mind. Mere absent-mindedness does not constitute a defect of reason. Slide 26. Disease of the mind. The defense must also prove that the defendant was suffering from a disease of the mind at the time of the offense. The disease of the mind must cause a defect of reason. The disease must affect the mind, not the brain in the physical sense. The disease must affect the ordinary mental faculties of reason, memory, and understanding. The disease of the mind does not mean any disease of the brain. It means a disease which affects the proper functioning of the mind. Lord Lane C.J. in the case of Hennessy, 1989, 1 WLR 287. Various conditions have been held to amount to a disease of the mind, including schizophrenia, epilepsy, sleepwalking, and hyperglycemia, which is diabetes. Slide 27. Disease of the mind, للإطلاع. Cerebral tumor. A brain tumor is likely to amount to a disease of the mind. However, in the case of Charlson, 1955, 39 CR APPR 37, it was held that a cerebral tumor was not a disease of the mind. The defendant had hit his son with a mallet and medical evidence showed that the defendant was suffering from a cerebral tumor which made him liable to motiveless outbursts of impulsiveness, violence over which he had no control. This decision was disproved in the later House of Lords case authority of Bratty v. Attorney General for Northern Ireland, 1963, AC 386, in which Lord Denning took the view that a brain tumor was a disease of the mind. The case of Charlson is not likely to be followed today. Slide 28. Disease of the mind, للإطلاع. Arteriosclerosis. Arteriosclerosis is a hardening of the arteries which leads to a congestion of blood in the brain and a temporary lack of consciousness. Arteriosclerosis was held to amount to a disease of the mind in the case of Kemp, 1957, 1 QB 399. Epilepsy. Epilepsy is classed as a disease of the mind. For this reason, a defendant who commits an offense during an epileptic seizure may only plead the defense of insanity rather than the more favorable defense of automatism. Sleepwalking. Sleep-related violence is also classed as insanity in law, so a defendant who commits a criminal offense whilst sleepwalking will only have the defense of insanity available to him. Diabetes or hyperglycemia. A defendant who suffers from diabetes and who commits a criminal offense whilst in a hyperglycemic state may only rely upon the defense of insanity. Hyperglycemia is a condition where the blood sugar level in the body is high and is caused by diabetes. Diabetics regulate their blood sugar level by taking insulin. A failure to take insulin will result in a high blood sugar level and hyperglycemia. The case of Hennessy, 1989, 1 WLR 287, provides the authority for the principle that a defendant who commits an offense in a hyperglycemic state may only plead insanity. A defendant who commits a criminal offense whilst in a hypoglycemic state, low blood sugar level, may rely upon the defense of automatism if the hypoglycemia is caused by an external factor rather than the condition of diabetes itself. Where the hypoglycemia is caused by an injection of insulin, which leads to excess insulin in the blood, the defense of automatism may be raised. However, if the hypoglycemic state is due to natural factors, the defense will not be available. Slide 30. Did not know the nature and the quality of the act. Once the defendant has proved that at the time of the offense he was suffering from a defect of reason caused by a disease of the mind, the defendant must further prove either that the defendant did not know the nature and quality of the act, or that he did not know the act was wrong. Proof that the defendant did not know the nature and quality of the act, or did not know the act was wrong, is proof that the defendant did not have the mens rea of the relevant offense. The nature and quality of the act refers to the physical nature of the act, not the moral or legal nature of the act. So the defendant must not know the physical nature of the act, and the issue is not whether or not the defendant knows that the act he is doing is wrong, but whether the defendant knows what he is doing. Examples: did the defendant know that he was stabbing or hitting a person, or that he was burning down a building or taking property which belongs to another person, or that he was having sex with a person? In relation to the last examples, the rape defenses bill, if enacted, will prevent a defendant from relying upon sleepwalking or non-insane automatism as a defense to rape. The bill will mean that such a defendant will not be able to claim that he did not know what he was doing. Slide 31. Did not know the act was wrong. If the defendant did know the physical nature of the act he was doing, the defendant may still prove insanity if he can prove that he did not know that the act was wrong. It must be proved that the defendant did not know that act was legally wrong, rather than merely morally wrong. This was confirmed in the case of Windle, 1952, 2QB, 826. This strict approach was confirmed in the case of Johnson, 2007, EWCA, Crim, 1978. The defendant suffered from paranoid schizophrenia and stabbed the victim with a kitchen knife. The trial judge refused to leave the defense of insanity to the jury because the defendant had known that what he was doing was against the law. نهاية الشرائح من 1 حتى 31 slides 1 to 31 ونهاية التسجيل. تقدمت مبادرة ضوء بصوت دانا بيرقدار.